We were dwelling upon the sixth chapter of the book of Exodus. When I closed last week, I was speaking to you about Moses. He had been in to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh had not hearkened unto him. And likewise, the children of Israel, they were in anguish, and they were in bondage, and they were being treated much more rougher than they had been before. And now Moses, he had met them when he had come out, and these people, they were in such terrible trouble, they were in no state or condition to receive any comfort. And yet God had given unto Moses promises concerning these people. And I had been dwelling upon these promises and how wonderful they were. And when Moses went and told the children of Israel these promises, they hearkened not unto them. They hearkened not unto Moses because of the anguish and the distress that they were in. I dwelt upon this as being a type of the children of God, how that those that are under the law in bondage, how that they likewise come under the means of grace, and how that they hear so many blessed promises, and the promises and the truths that they hear meet their particular case, and they are for such poor creatures. But because of their bondage and because of the anguish that they are in, they are in unbelief and in doubt and in fear, and they cannot receive these truths. They cannot believe that they are for them. They look upon themselves and they say, what? Such a sinner like me? Such a creature that continually transgresses God's commandments? Such a person as I have learned myself to be? Those promises are not for me. No, I'm going to die in my sins. I'm going to go on like this and perish. You have a voice like that in your heart? That's the way it was with the children of Israel. They couldn't believe any of these promises that God spake to them by Moses. They thought they were going to die in their bondage. They were going to perish in the land of Egypt. Nothing ever would come of being delivered, being brought out into that glorious land that they had been promised of. Oh, may there be some soul here that says, that's just the way I am. I can't believe that I'll ever be delivered, that I'll ever be brought out, that I'll ever be saved. Oh, you're in such anguish of spirit. Oh, may you turn and look at your soul and say with David, who also was in that state at times and said, wherefore art thou cast down, O my soul? Hope thou in God, for he shall surely deliver you. And now Moses, he was commanded by God to go into Pharaoh again and speak unto him to lead the children of Israel go. But now we find Moses, he's in the same position as the Israelites are. He says, why, the children of Israel wouldn't even hearken to me. How much less will Pharaoh listen to me, who am a man of uncircumcised lips? Moses, he was at the point already, too, of giving up his work and laying it down. What was the use of going on? The children of Israel didn't believe him anymore. They had believed him at first, but now they didn't. And now Moses, he couldn't believe that Pharaoh would ever listen to him anymore. Oh, it's discouraging enough, my hearers, for a servant of God to find so much opposition in his work. You may be sure that the ministers of God, they labor in this respect too. How often they meet with atheistical characters, people that do not believe anything at all. And just like Pharaoh, he didn't believe anything either. And then they have some people that have believed. And then they're just like the Israelites, they're murmuring and complaining too. It makes a minister go in secret, believe me. It makes him go on his knees. It makes him say sometimes, why go on any further with this work? The people don't believe, and nothing is being done with the message that you give me to speak. This, I think, was the case of Moses at this present time, but God encouraged him. God gave him a commandment that he should go in with Aaron unto Pharaoh and speak unto him. and that if Pharaoh demanded of them a sign or a miracle, then they should take the staff, the rod that they had, and they should cast it on the ground, and it would become a serpent before Pharaoh and his servants. They then had a solemn charge and a very encouraging charge that God would certainly deliver these people. There was no question about it. It was necessary that these men were encouraged in this way. And now we find them going into Pharaoh. And Pharaoh, he's looking at them. He's marveling why did these men come back. Now, they had been there once before, and he had told them to go back to their work. How dare they intrude and come in by him and speak to him again? Why, all he had to do was say the word and they would have been killed. He could have commanded it that they would have been slain. They would have been cast into the river. But he listened to them, and they said unto him, "The Lord God of the Hebrews has sent us unto you to tell you to lead the children of Israel, go out into the wilderness to serve him." And now Pharaoh, he demanded of them, although it doesn't say in Scripture, he demanded of them a sign, a token, that this God that they spoke about was such a wonderful God. What can you prove to me that this God has sent you? Aaron then, according to the word of God, he casts down this rod, and this rod becomes a serpent. And now, in the land of Egypt, these people were very idolatrous. I was reading a little history of these people. Might be interesting for you to know. These people, at first, if you'll look into Scripture, they recognized God. You know, at the time of Abraham and the time of Joseph, they more or less believed that there was such a divine being and that he had given laws and commandments, and they abided by them to a certain extent. But this nation fell away greatly into idolatry. And this nation not only began to raise up people that had died and made gods of them, but they made gods likewise of animals, of insects, of reptiles. And they had all sorts of creatures, superstitious creatures they were, that they believed were gods that could help them. And they called upon these things. They worshiped them. And now this nation likewise believed in magic. And this was one of the things that they gloried in. And Pharaoh, he had men called magicians, and he called these magicians at this time to see whether these magicians couldn't do what Moses and Aaron had done. You read of these magicians in 2 Timothy, I just don't know what chapter, but you read there that Jambres, a man by the name of Jannes and Jambres, they withstood Moses. They were supposed to have been the chief magicians that were standing up against Moses and opposing him. And here these magicians came, and they took likewise their rods, and they cast him down, and they became serpents before them. Now, of course, this kind of made the miracle that Moses and Aaron did as if it was no miracle, as if they likewise were just magicians, and that they were a little better, probably, than the magicians that he had. Now, to me and you, we would wonder and say, well, how come that these magicians cast down rods and they became serpents? How is it possible? Well, some of them say that they think that these magicians, they carried serpents with them, and when they threw the rods down, they cast down the serpents too. Others are of the solemn opinion that it was Satan that changed these rods into serpents. Others think it was just a delusion. It was just an optical delusion that these magicians were so sleight of hand, they threw down these rods, and it just looked like if they were serpents. But there are many people that don't agree with any of these interpretations. Most of the people, they believe that the word of God says that they became serpents, these rods. And the best interpretation that I read of was that they believe that God himself, much to the amazement and not to the expectation of these magicians, change these rods into serpents. For the simple reason, so that Pharaoh's heart would be hardened. For when he seen this take place, the miracle that they had done was of no avail to him. And therefore, he would not hearken and would not let Israel go. This then, more or less, hardened the heart of Pharaoh. We read distinctly that God said he would harden his heart. I said to you last week or the week before that God never puts any evil into a person's heart or never hardens a person's heart. That would be contrary to God and then punish a man for doing that. But you know, God leaves people over to themselves. He leaves men over to a reprobate mind. Sometimes he leaves a person over to his lust and to his passions and to his corruptions which he goes on serving. And some people, they become so hardened in these things that no matter what happens, judgments, afflictions, the commandments of God, the exhortations, the warnings, they have no effect upon the person. The person is under such a hardened condition that he just goes on therein. Oh, it's a solemn thing, my hearers, to be left by God in this condition, believe me. Pray that God will never leave you that way. For we all are by nature hard of heart. And we're all just like Pharaoh. We have the same nature. And we don't want to obey God. We don't want to worship God and serve God. That's not our nature. It's contrary to it. And now this man, Pharaoh, he couldn't believe that God had performed this miracle that these men did. And he hardened his heart. Oh, my hearers, I've been thinking about that, that his heart was hardened. You know, every one of us have a hard heart. But there are so few that know that they have that. If you ever have had a soft heart, then you know what a hard heart is. Have you ever had a soft heart? Has God ever softened your heart? You know, it says in the book of Job, the Lord maketh my heart soft. You know, there ain't a greater blessing in the world to have a soft heart. Have you ever been broken down in contrition before this great God against whom you have sinned? Have you ever been melted at his feet because of his goodness, of his kindness, of his long suffering to you, such a sinner like you? Have you ever laid at his feet and had his good spirit come in and prompt you to bring out just what you were, and you cried just like a little child before him? Oh, what a miserable creature you had been in his sight. Oh, what a blessing it is, my hearers, when we have, in this respect, a soft heart. You know, a soft heart is a wonderful thing. Now, there's true confession of sin, there's true abhorrence of self. A person can't get low enough when God softens his heart. And you know, it happens so often with the people of God, after having this soft heart, these warm, these tender affections towards God, that their heart becomes hard. Oh, they're so hard of heart sometimes, and lasts sometimes a long time. I'm speaking from experience, my hearers. Nothing affects the heart. They do their exercises as they always did before, but no feeling in them, no humility in them, no breaking down before God, no true confession of sin. Come up to the house of God. The word don't seem to take any effect. Don't have a ear to hear it. Don't have a heart to receive it. You know something about that? You ever trouble about your hard heart? You ever say, oh, this hard heart of mine, nothing seems to affect it. It's just like a piece of ice. Just like a rock. If you ever have trouble with your hard heart, my hearers, it's a sign that you had a soft heart one time. But believe me, no one has any trouble with the hardness of their heart until God melts a sinner's heart into contrition. And there may be a soul here saying, I don't think my heart will ever get soft anymore. It's been hard so long, and I can go over the top of everything. I can do this, and I can do that, and I can give way to that, and everything seems to be gone. You know, that seems to harden our hearts more yet. The more you give way to sin, the more you fall into it, the more you give way to it, oh, how hard your heart becomes. You troubled like that? I wish every one of my hearers were. There are so few people troubled like what I'm talking about. I think there are a few amongst my hearers, thanks be to God. They understand what I'm talking about. I'll tell you one thing, what can soften that heart. You know that still small voice that Elijah heard? That can soften the heart in a moment. Oh, that breaks it to pieces. That humbles it into contrition. Oh, then true confession of sin begins to flow again. And then the heart goes out to that living God. Oh, then it's your complaint. Lord, don't let my heart be so hard anymore. Do soften my heart. Do fill it with affection and love to thee and to thy word. Oh, do draw me. Are them your sighs? Are them your cries? You have trouble then with the hardness of your heart. Pharaoh never had that trouble, my hearers, never in his life. No, he never had a soft heart. And this man, Pharaoh, he refused to let Israel go. And now God comes to Moses and Aaron again. And he says unto Moses and Aaron, go down to the river and speak. Speak unto this man, Pharaoh, and say unto him, leave my people go, or otherwise I will stretch my rod out over the waters and over the rivers in the land of Egypt, and they all shall become blood. He told Moses and Aaron that this king was coming down to the riverside. You know, these people in Egypt, they worship this river. You know, this river was a wonderful river to Egypt. The River Nile, it runs about 1,500 miles. And when it enters into the land of Egypt, it branches out into two branches. One goes northeast and the other one goes northwest. And as these branches go down through the land of Egypt, there are a number of smaller branches which also lead out into the Mediterranean Sea. And therefore, it is called by certain writers the seven-mouth Nile, having seven distinct entrances into the Mediterranean Sea. And now this river, its water was very delicious to drink. That seems odd, doesn't it? To drink out of the river. I and you wouldn't go down to the river to drink out of it. We want to have it that it would be made pure, that it would be cleansed. But these people, they went down to the river and they drank the water. Even the editor, Matthew Henry, the commentator, he said that he was down there and that he drank of that water. He said it was delicious. He says the Turks, they take salt to make themselves thirsty so they could drink more and more of the water because it tastes so good. And now these people, they worship this river. It was a god to them. You read in the Bible that they called this river, this is my own river. They called it the Egyptian Sea. And they went down like Pharaoh did every morning, just maybe like the Catholics do, they go to church every morning too. And they worship something. I don't know what they worship, but these people too, they went down to the river and they worshiped this here river. It was their god. Well, you can well imagine that they esteemed this river because it meant everything to them. You know, this land of Egypt was very fertile due to this river, as I told you a couple of times, now that it overflowed its banks. Now, this land, it brought forth vegetables and fruits in abundance. Now, there was much that was good in the land of Egypt. There were dates, there were figs, there were almonds, and there was everything growing in this land. You know, in the summertime, the heat was very excessive, almost unbearable. But the dew to the ground being moistened by this river, it was like a Garden of Eden, this country. And you know, now God is going to bring rule upon this country. Why? Because these people, these inhabitants, they were an idolatrous people. They were worshiping everything else but the God who had created this river. They didn't recognize him. He had formed this river and made it flow through their land. But did they go to worship him for that? Did they acknowledge him? No. They went down to the river and worshiped the river. There we find Pharaoh on this morning. He's by the riverside. And Moses and Aaron are speaking to him and telling him that if he don't let the people of Israel go, they had a commandment of God to stretch the rod out over the river, and the river would become blood. And all the waters in the land of Egypt would become blood. And now God commanded Aaron to stretch out the rod, and he did so. What power was in the commandment of God for Aaron? He obeyed God, and he stretched out this rod, and the waters all became blood. Not only in the river Nile, but in all little ponds, and even in wooden vessels and in stone vessels, we read. These wooden and these stone vessels the people had in the land of Egypt. When this river overflowed its banks, then they gathered as much water as they could into these wooden vessels and these stone vessels. Because it was only at a certain time in the year that this river overflowed its banks. And they kept this water for the period of time that it didn't overflow. But now even in these vessels of wood and stone, all the water in it was turned to blood. You know, these people, the Egyptians, they never offered any sacrifices like the Israelites did. They were commanded by God to kill a lamb, to kill a goat, and they offered a sacrifice of blood. These Egyptian people, they were so pure and so clean on themselves. Oh, they didn't want to touch anything like blood. Why, they wouldn't even touch a dead body. If they touched a dead body, they had to make absolution for themselves because they were unclean. You can see then in this the state and condition of these Egyptians. And now God, he brings blood over all the land of Egypt. No matter where they looked, they seen blood. Now, this must have been an awful, ghastly sight unto these Egyptians. You know, there are some people, they can't even see a person if he's wounded, if he's hurt. If blood begins to flow, people, they faint away. They can't even take a good look at it without passing out. But here, these people, they had to see blood. No matter where they went, they seen it. Now, this was an awful judgment. You know, they couldn't go down to the river to drink anymore because it was blood. They couldn't go down there to wash their clothes. Who wants to wash their clothes in blood? And then in this river, there was so many good fish. Oh, the Egyptians, they made a livelihood by fishing in this river. And you know, the Jews, they love fish. Further on in our history of the Israelite nation, they remembered these Israelites when they had been back in the land of Egypt. They remembered, they said, the fish that they ate when they sat by the flesh pots, and when they had leek and onion and garlic. Oh, they wanted to go back, these murmuring Israelites. They had it very good in food. Even though they were slaves and they were in bondage, they had plenty to eat in the land of Egypt. As I've been saying, it was a very fertile country. God richly blessed it. But now, no matter where they went, there was blood. What were the poor people going to do? They began digging in the ground to get water so they could have some water to drink. All the Egyptians, they dug around the shores of the river. And God was so good that even in this judgment, these Egyptians, they found yet water coming up out of the ground. that it wasn't polluted with blood, that they were enabled yet to drink it. And now this plague, the first plague that God brought upon the land of Egypt, was blood. You know, these self-same Egyptians, they had cast the children of Israel, before they were 2 years of age, they had cast them into this very river. And they had polluted this river with the blood of the children of Israel. Even Moses was supposed to be cast into that, you know. And now God visits the river with blood. The first plague was blood. The last plague was likewise blood, my hearers. Don't you think God meant something with that? I don't read anything like this in the commentary, but I was meditating on that, praying to God that he would give me a little light in this. Why did he visit this Egypt with blood? Wasn't he teaching these people something? They abhorred bloody sacrifices. They didn't want no part of it. But now God came with blood, as if to say, this is the only way now that you can be reconciled with me. This is the only way that you can find peace with me. I, that great God, I brought this blood down upon you. And now the magicians, they came likewise, and they also made blood come. Of course, they didn't make it come like Aaron and Moses did. They brought it over all the land of Egypt. But they only did it in a little area. And this, of course, seemed to Pharaoh as if it was not from God. He couldn't believe that this plague was from God, because his magicians likewise made blood. And he went back into his house and he wouldn't even listen. He wouldn't even give ear. He hearkened not. He hardened his heart. My hearers, this blood then, that these people, the Egyptians, abhorred and were loath to use, and practically the whole land stank, it says in the Bible. Now this blood that they turned away from in disgust is a type likewise of the people who are still in the wild. The Bible teaches us that there are so many people that are just like these Egyptians. You know, the preaching of the gospel is unto the wise foolishness, and likewise unto the Greeks. And the preaching of Jesus Christ and the shedding of his precious blood is likewise to so many people foolishness. They turn away from it in disgust, just like the Egyptians did from the blood that God brought upon them. Oh, how many turn away from the music that is in the gospel. But to a poor sinner who needs and realizes the need of this blood, all the beauty that they see in this blood, the prayers that they send up that God would bring the precious blood of Christ down upon their sinful souls, that they may be made whole. Is that your prayer? Ah, may you experience yet in your lifetime the healing virtue of the precious blood of Christ. You will not turn away in disgust from this message that you hear, but you will long to hear it. You will delight to hear it. And you will want to know him who in love gave his precious blood upon the cross of Calvary. And now, my hearers, God again comes into the land of Egypt with another plague. The first plague was blood. The second plague was frogs. This plague of blood only lasted 7 days. We don't read that Moses entreated God to take it away, but it seems that God just brought it down for 7 days, and then the river cleared up, and all the blood was taken away again. And now we find that God speaks again unto Moses and Aaron, and they are commanded again to stretch out their rod over the rivers and over the waters. And the frogs came up out of the river and out of the waters in abundance. There are two types of frogs. One type, it dwells in the water and out of the water. And there is one type that only dwells upon the land. They are called toads. This type that came up out of the water and on the land was the type that God brought upon the land of Egypt. And now these people in Egypt, God said that it would come into their houses, it would come into their beds, and it would come into their netting troughs. It would come in every place of these frogs. Oh, what an awful judgment this must have been, my hearers. These frogs, they're not a poisonous insect or animal, but where there was such a multitude of them, and where they were so numerous, you may be sure that the Egyptians were killing them right and left. And because of the stench of these things being slain in this way, surely there was a pestilence going around even in the land of Egypt from these frogs being killed. And now these people, they worshipped a frog. You may see in this how God spake to these people. Everything that they took to be a god, God came with and pointed out to them that it was no god, that he was the God in heaven above. It is said that they worshipped even the frog. The frog was a type of a certain god that they had who lived under the ground, who was the god in the seas and in the waters. Osiris, it is called in the commentary. And these people then, they were invested with these frogs. And these magicians, they likewise brought up frogs. And now, where there were so many of them, Pharaoh, he called Moses and Aaron, and he entreated them to pray to God for him, that he would take away the frogs. And Moses was surprised. "When do you want me to ask God?" he says. "Tomorrow," he says, "at this time." Why didn't he want the frogs out of the way right away? If it was me and you, we would have said, "Pray right now, let's get rid of them, huh?" No, he says, "Tomorrow." He had hopes probably that the frogs would go away themselves, and then he wouldn't have to thank Aaron and Moses if they did go away. But now Moses, he went out and he prayed to God. And God inclined and heard the cry of Moses, and he took the frogs away. They were all dumped back into the sea. There wasn't a frog left. Only those that died, and they gathered them together and put big heaps of frogs together. And then when Pharaoh seen that there was a respite, then he hardened his heart again and would not let Israel go. You know, Pharaoh, he's like so many people. Maybe he's like you. He's like me too. You know, if we're in trouble, if we have an affliction, if we're sick and we think maybe we're going to die, then we cry to God. It may be that we have somebody in our family that's sick, child, mother, father, brother or sister. We all have afflictions in life. And then we cry to God. And you know, God is so good sometimes that he hears and takes away the affliction, makes the person better again to whom we cried. And oh, when we cry to God in this way, my hearers, we have so many vows. And we make so many promises. You ever do that? Oh, people are so queer, you know, when they pray to God. They don't realize that they can't keep their vows and keep their promises. They don't know themselves. But they do this. Oh, they promise to live a better life. They promise God so many things if he'll only take away this trouble, this affliction, this sickness that is visiting with someone in your family. And God does that. God is so good that he does that. And what does that person do? He does just like Pharaoh. When he sees that there's a respite, he wouldn't let Israel go. And so it is with these people. When God hears, brings out brings out of trouble, delivers out of affliction. Right away they forget all about what God does, and they go on in their sins. They go ahead on in their course of life just like they did before. All their promises, all their vows to God didn't mean anything. Are you like that? I hope you're not. I hope I'm teaching you that when affliction comes, you may pray to God that he may deliver you or your loved one out of affliction. But oh, don't promise him anything, my hearers, because we can't keep any of our promises, believe me. We're not a bit different than Pharaoh when it comes to this. Maybe you see yourself in Pharaoh. Oh, my hearers, this man, Pharaoh, he hardened his heart, and he would not hearken unto the voice of God. My time is gone again, my hearers. The next plague I am to speak about is lice. Now, there are 10 plagues. I don't know if I can take them all. Seems to be more or less just one right after another. But we'll attempt to give you a little description of each one of them, the Lord willing, and if he spares us, and you all come up to listen, we'll try to gather what we can out of the commentary and also a spiritual interpretation of these things as much as the Lord will lead us into it. May the Lord bless the feeble message this afternoon to your immortal souls, and that's all we have for today.